Hello and welcome to this week's Ukraine Calling program. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. We'll have a roundup of the weekly news for you, a feature interview with Yerema Duch, who's a hot millennial who's leading Ukraine's Twitter diplomacy and is the president's foreign media coordinator. There'll be a cultural section and some music. But first, as always, the news.
Over 20 Crimean Tatars were detained in the annexed Crimea.
The trial was adjourned almost as soon as it began.
Paul Manafort, former Trump campaign manager, now under scrutiny.
Do you think that officials in the Trump administration collaborated with Russia to influence our election?
Ukraina-da, saat yedi.
Crimea update. Crimean Tatars continue to protest and get detained in the Russian-occupied peninsula. This week, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, reported that five individual picketers were arrested as they held signs saying, "Putin, our children are not terrorists," and "Putin, our grandfathers are not terrorists." They were protesting the jailing of 76-year-old Server Karametov, who was arrested on 13th of July while protesting against the detention of 30 young Crimean Tatars. They were protesting the jailing of 76-year-old Server Karametov, who was arrested on the 13th of July while protesting against the detention of 30 young Crimean Tatars. International organizations like Amnesty International are demanding immediate release for Karametov. He has Parkinson's disease. Co-founder of Crimea SOS, Tamila Tasheva, told Hromadske Radio that this is a growing trend, individuals appearing at government buildings and courts to protest detentions. Ukraine's foreign ministry is also protesting the detentions, and President Poroshenko chose a new permanent representative of Ukraine to Crimea. After meetings and reports from Crimean Tatar leaders, he removed Natalia Popovich and appointed Boris Babin. A new Crimean Tatar radio station called Hayat began broadcasting on Thursday, 17th of August. The idea is to provide information to Crimea. For now, they are broadcasting on 103.5 FM in the Kherson Oblast, which borders Crimea, while their headquarters are in Kyiv. The project was created by the Crimean News Agency, and Hayat in English means life. And some in-house news. Hromadske Radio will be returning to Ukraine's national airways this autumn, starting on September the 4th. An agreement was reached with Ukrainian Radio, which recently became a public broadcaster, and the two projects will now resume the cooperation that started back in 2014. In Kyiv, we'll be heard on 105 FM and will post a link with all the local frequencies throughout the country. Yanukovych trial postponed again as his lawyer quits. Kyiv judge Vladislav Divyatko was once more forced to postpone the trial of fugitive former president Viktor Yanukovych this Thursday, August the 17th. Yanukovych is charged with treason, violating Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty, and abetting Russian aggression. He is being tried in absentia since he remains in hiding in Russia. But Ukraine appointed him a defense lawyer. This lawyer, Vitaly Meshechik, quit on Thursday, saying that he was having difficulties with the case. The trial is set to resume on September the 6th, and the court will be sending written notices to Yanukovych at all of his known addresses. It will also be reaching out through media announcements and its website. Ukraine, the US, elections and hacking. Ukraine continues to pop up in international headlines in connection with the US 2016 election and hacking. This week, Politico reported on MP Andriy Derkach's efforts to dig into possible Ukrainian ties with the Clinton campaign. Derkach once belonged to Yanukovych's Regions Party and is now accusing members of Ukraine's Anti-Corruption Bureau of illegal interference in the US election. Ukraine's Prosecutor General's office has launched a formal investigation whether Ukraine's authorities provided the Clinton campaign with information about Paul Manafort. He was Trump's campaign manager and was fired when reports appeared that he had taken under-the-table payments from disgraced Ukrainian President Yanukovych. And the New York Times ran a story about a Ukrainian hacker known only by his online alias Profexa, who is now reportedly working with the FBI to get to the bottom of Russia's cyber war. Apparently, Russia used malware that he created in its hacking efforts against the U.S., possibly the break-in of the Democratic National Committee. The young man closed down his website and contacted Ukrainian authorities in January, when the U.S. Department of Homeland Security identified him as the creator of the malware. In a related development, the cyber Berkut became active again this summer after being dormant for a while. It's a group reportedly created by supporters of ousted President Yanukovych. When Washington began digging into possible links between the Trump campaign and Moscow, they began releasing stolen emails to refocus attention on Clinton's alleged collusion with Ukraine. The situation on Ukraine's front has been tense over the last week. Pro-Russian forces have reportedly increased the number of attacks with the use of heavy artillery and multiple rocket launches. The Ukrainian Army Press Service also reports increased activity of subversive groups along the front line. On August 15th, OSCE monitors informed that they registered the presence of servicemen with Russian military insignia in Donbas. On August the 17th, pro-Russian forces reportedly shelled the settlement of Zaitseve while humanitarian aid was being distributed among local people. Overall, over the last week, 3 Ukrainian servicemen were killed, 37 wounded. Kyiv disparaged and praised. Kyiv was in this year's Economist Intelligence Unit's 2017 Global Livability Report, released this week, as one of the world's 10 worst cities to live in. Business Ukraine responded with an article calling the ranking absurd. The article quotes foreigners saying positive things about Kyiv and points out that visitors to the May 2017 Eurovision Song Contest in Kyiv were almost universal in their praise of the city's dynamism and attractiveness, over 90% of those surveyed expressing a readiness to return.
Well, welcome to our weekly in-depth discussion on Ukraine Calling. I'm Bohdan Nahainlo in Kyiv, and my guest this week is a young man who holds a very responsible position. He is the foreign media coordinator and special assistant to the press secretary of the president. His name is Yarema Duch. Welcome, Yarema, to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start in the traditional way. Maybe just a few words about yourself. How did you end up in such a high profile, given the conditions that Ukraine finds itself in, position?
Well, to make it shortly, I'm from a beautiful city in western Ukraine, Lviv, and I was living there for entire life. But when Euromaidan has started in 2013, me and my friends started traveling to Kyiv a lot, and we've been helping self-defense of Maidan, so-called Samooborona Maidano. And when it's all ended...
Don't be so modest. I see you were the press secretary at the Maidan self-defense.
Well, for a few weeks, I was a press secretary of self-defense of Maidan because, well, normally we've been handling with foreign media because through the whole revolution, every big media outlet, Ukrainian media outlet, they already got their own sources in all the units, so-called sotnyas. So it wasn't an issue for them to get a confirmation or to get some in-depth news from Samooborona. So they made their own networking, and we didn't interfere with this because, well, we literally had no time for this. But since late November, or I would say early December, a lot of foreign journalists...
2013.
So late November, early December. A lot of foreign journalists started coming to Kyiv, and, well, some of them was representatives of Moscow bureaus of big American and British media outlets, and they were in deep with the whole situation, and they knew that they want to speak to ABC names, and they wanted to go to 1, 2, 3 locations. But there were also a lot of journalists who were coming to Kyiv to a big journalist spot that time. And they were like, so guys, what's going on here? And you've been, looking into their cases, and you've been helping them to try to understand what's going on.
Yarema, at that stage, did you feel that it was important for the activists on the Maidan to be speaking with a one voice, a common voice, sending the same message?
Definitely. This was one of the proposals why I volunteered to work with the media in such position. And also in December, that was for the first time when I understood that, well, Russians are not transferring news, they are also making them. And that was kind of the first bell, the first ring, when we started to think that, well, probably Russians are paying something bigger attention to towards their media.
You mean distorting news?
Of course.
Distorting news, the fake news issue in what we call the hybrid war. Yeah. So, okay, you're in the Maidan, you're in the thick of this. And then shortly afterwards, we have the tragic events, mass killings here. Yanukovych is ousted. And suddenly, not only is Crimea occupied, but the Russians continue their aggression in the Donbas. And I see from your CV that you end up somehow, and this is would be interesting for us to hear, you end up in the National Security and Defense Council as the press secretary of the secretary of the NSDC, the National Security and Defense Council.
Ousted of the country, Andriy Poruby, that time leader of self-defense, he was appointed as the secretary of National Security and Defense Council. And, well, having some history between us, he proposed me to join his team in NSDC. And, well, that was the only possible answer. And it was yes, because I've been very into the revolution. I got a friend in Heavenly Hundred, and I thought that, well, that's part of my job to... Well, frankly, I understood. Well, I thought that it's going to be like half of a year. We will settle everything up. We will start processes. We will change management in major governmental structures, and I'll get back home. But a few days after we got into the offices, Russians seized Crimean parliament, and everything has started.
Now, tell me, what's the difference from working for civil society as an activist and working for what had become an official structure? You were now working for the government, the new government of the time. Were there changes apparent immediately, or were things still run very much in the activist spirit?
Well, I'm a Ukrainian scout. I'm Plastun for more than 10 years, or it's already even 15. I'm not sure about that already. And I've been into social activism for half of my life, I would say, since I've been studying in Lviv University. I've been working for almost 4 years in Lviv City Council for a promotional office, and we've been promoting Lviv not only on domestic market, but also abroad. But what I've seen in NSDC and later in the presidential administration is a high level of responsibility, because it's one thing to talk on behalf of scouting organization or some other NGOs, and it's way another way of responsibility when you're responding on behalf of the entire country.
Did you feel at that stage when we were confronted with this aggression by Russia, first in Crimea, then in the Donbas, that the world was interested, that it cared, that it wanted to know more?
Well, definitely. I know that for sure, because we had thousands requests every day in March and later on in summer of 2014, when all major media outlets of English-speaking, not only English-speaking world, were sending their mobile crews to Ukraine, to first to Crimea, then to Donbas, then to MH17 tragedy site. And I can't say that we weren't on the map. I would say even Euromaidan and all the other tragic events of 2014 and 2015, they literally put Ukraine on English-speaking map. Because like 20 years ago, what they knew about Ukraine, Chernobyl, Klitschko, and
yes,
probably
but
all.
We had had the Orange Revolution, and for a time we were on the map and then faded off the map again. Was there a danger after the Maidan that confronted with hybrid warfare and distortion of the facts, presenting Ukrainians as fascists, as, you know, somehow staging a coup and ousting a legitimate president, that we would lose that battle for support and attention?
Well, I would say that almost 15 years ago, when we had an orange revolution, that time leadership, they didn't pay so much attention for the communications. Because, well, frankly, all those people who can talk to journalists, who can speak with the nation, they've been on the market, I would say. But that time leadership didn't pay a lot of attention to this. Thankfully, nowadays, the president, the prime minister, a bunch of ministers, they're hiring high-class professionals just to share what they are doing, to explain the nation and the other world what's happening in the country. So
is this public relations, public diplomacy, or how would you describe it?
I would say it's all together combined, because while we are facing hybrid warfare from the Russian Federation, we can't respond only with press releases. Cultural diplomacy, it's now a thing. Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Presidential Administration are paying huge attention to this. Also, NGOs as Ukraine Crisis Media Center are paying a lot of attention, not only to share press releases about what's going on in the country, but also to perform some unexpected projects. As, for instance, they brought a big board at the G20 meeting at Hamburg this summer, or Twitter Ukraine, when we are sharing a lot of news and sometimes trolling Russia when they are trying to share fake news.
Okay, just step back a second. So let's just stay with your role with the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine. So you were presumably there, what is it now, 3 years ago since the Ilovaisk tragedy, massacre, killings during the retreat of the Ukrainian forces. How serious a challenge was that to deal with, to explain that what was happening to the outside world?
Well, frankly, when I joined NSDC, I thought that, well, we will be the power at that time and we will help to, I would say, establish low-cost airlines between the cities to establish press trips for Ukrainian journalists from other regions to other cities, because I'm confident that, well, we are having this war, and, well, Russia benefited from lack of communication between Ukrainians and Ukrainian regions. Because, well, I've been to Donetsk only once in my life. When I lived in Lviv, it took me 26 hours by train one way to get there. And that's more than to fly to DC or to Toronto. And that's crazy. But things turned in another way, and I've filled my English vocabulary with words like bulletproof vest, armored personal carrier, and all that stuff. We've established from the very scratch communication with the outer world, and not only with outer world, but with domestic market as well. Because we've started to explain what's happening in Donbas. We started to share everyday press releases with the daily updates on what's going on.
When you say we, you're with the presidential administration. How well does the coordination with the foreign ministry, with the army, the security forces, with the prime minister's office function? Are you speaking with one voice? Do you coordinate your message? Do you meet regularly amongst yourselves, the official and de facto spokespersons for the country?
Well, in 2014, it was not only the NSDC, it was also Ministry of Foreign Affairs, it was that time acting President Turchinov and his team, that was also all the power entities. We started this in spring of 2014 together once in a few days, just to coordinate our efforts. Nowadays, it's easier, because we already working as one team for some time, and I'm namely the presidential administration, MFA, but the whole government as one team is playing as one team, and also involving NGOs who are working in the same field, namely Ukraine Crisis Media Center.
I asked that question because in many countries, not just in Ukraine, you feel that there are tensions, competition between ministries, agencies, vying for influence, for visibility. Is that under control in Ukraine today? Do you feel that in terms of in the area of projecting the right image of Ukraine abroad, that it's done in some harmonized way?
I would say that there are governmental entities who do want to be in a public sphere, who want to be present in media, and those who doesn't. And those who want to be in media, they are there. And normally their fields of responsibility aren't crossing. So we are normally sharing, I would say, fields where we are working as a public relations specialist. Frankly, we do know each other. And when there are some questions, we just simply calling or texting our counterparts and asking, hey, guys, what's your response on to, well, let's say, recent events when New York Times published this controversial article about North Korea and allegedly Yuzhmash was helping North Korea to start their missile program. And we've been in a close coordination with NSDC, with MFA, with other counterparts, just to coordinate what we are saying loud and also helping them to share the message.
Okay, so I see also from your CV that from the beginning of, when was it, 2015, you joined the Presidential Administration's Foreign Media Unit. Was there a big change from working for the National Security and Defense Council to working directly in the presidential team?
Well, to answer this question, I will go one step back to 2014, because that time I was one among few English-speaking spokespersons in the Ukrainian government. So I normally was, like a fixer. A lot of foreign journalists were coming to Ukraine and they were calling me and asking, hey, we would like to go there, or we would like to speak with such officials. Could you help us to set up the meetings? So when I joined the presidential team, I was already, well, full of contacts and experience how to deal with foreign media, and well, they knew me, I knew them, and it was easier to start new relations on my new position.
Well, you seem to be doing a good job, you and your colleagues, because just this summer, Kyiv saw a summit with the EU, a big NATO council meeting, a visit of the UN Secretary General, the Secretary of State of the US was here, and many more things. Sanctions were tightened by the US and the EU against Russia. So seemingly, you and your colleagues in other agencies and ministries are doing a good job in protecting Ukraine's interests and advancing them. But behind the scenes, can we be as smug or as self-confident as I'm suggesting, or are there still issues in getting the message across?
Well, now I would say that world is a very small place, and even having this, well, once again, controversial article in New York Times, it wasn't a big issue to reach to New York Times and to share our position with them, because we, well, frankly, know each other already. When we are having our message and want to share this across the globe, it's not a problem. There is no technical problems to share our messages. The other question is that our messages should be interesting for the authors, and that's probably where we are trying to do our best, not to share messages which won't be interesting for outer world, but to try to make them interested in what's happening in our country. So that's what we are basically doing.
But I would suggest that we are successful, and you in particular are successful in presenting the image of Ukraine as a victim of aggression and as a country that wants to be itself, to affirm its right to self-identification as a European democracy. But do you not find that it's a bit more difficult in explaining why we are lagging behind in reform? There's a lot of criticism, and I noticed that during the high-level visits here, almost all of the high-level officials said, but we are expecting Ukraine to deliver on reform. How do you deal with those questions, not just publicly, but behind the scenes when you have coffee or have a beer with some of these journalists?
Well, there is always pros and cons in every situation, I would say, because, well, there is a saying that Moscow wasn't burnt in a day. It took more than one day. So we are also understand that it will take some time. Well, even the president is publicly stating that he is not happy with the pace of reforms that are being developed in the country. So everybody is, I would say, like seeing the situation and understand that, well, we are not there where we would like to be. On the other hand, we got some success stories as a new patrolling police or Prozoro procurement and all that.
E-declarations, Naboo.
Well, we are not here, well, to boast with our successes, but they are there. And also when I talk to journalists, I also trying to mention that, hey, dudes, we are not only failing in something, but we are succeeding in a lot of major fields, because it's hard to rebuild the country which were heading in the wrong direction for more than 20 years, and it still takes time to get out on the right track. But I'm confident that we are already in the right track. I'm not sure that there's some ways that we will.
Okay, Yarema, finally, because we're running out of time here. So I detect an optimistic note from you. I don't sense that your 3 years or more of involvement in the official efforts to defend Ukraine, project Ukraine favorably, that you haven't become disillusioned. I still feel that passion in you.
Well, I serve my country, I would say, that my part of bringing something to our biggest victory, because I wouldn't be very effective at the front line, but I'm doing my job here.
Thank you very much, Yarema. So I've been speaking to Yarema Duch. He's the foreign media coordinator and special assistant to the press secretary of the president. Thank you very much, Yarema.
Thank you indeed.
Culture. The art of Maria Primachenko keeps being reinvented in a modern urban context. Primachenko was a self-taught Ukrainian folk artist who painted in the naive or primitive genre. She worked from the 1930s through to the 80s and was well known for her fantastical images of plants and animals. The city of Kyiv is planning the construction of a Maria Primachenko art boulevard in central Kyiv, with street furniture and recreated Primachenko mythical creatures made out of mosaic. And Primachenko images lend themselves so easily to advertising design, as seen in the latest promotional advertising in Galava shopping mall in central Kyiv. And here's a song in Crimean Tatar for you. It's called Elva, which is the word for halva, and is performed by the mysterious duo that call themselves R2Ya. Enjoy! Next week, Ukraine will be celebrating its 26th anniversary of independence. Bohdan Mihailov will bring you a new feature interview and will have more news, culture and music for you. Tune in again next week for a new edition of Ukraine Calling. We'd be happy to receive any feedback from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Oksana Smerechuk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.